Welcome back to the third episode of Alpine Worlds, the Four Season Mountain Show podcast. I'm Matthias Weger and I'm here again with my brother Jakob.
Today we're going to talk about episode 4, which has just launched on our YouTube channel, as well as some nerdy couloir gear talking.
And also why couloir riding makes you stupid.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, 1, drop in.
Welcome back, everyone, to the third episode of Alpine Worlds. I'm Matthias Weger, and I'm here again with my brother Jakob.
Stoked to be here. Today, we're going to talk about episode 4 and how we ride the narrowest chutes you can find out there. I think that's a pretty interesting topic for today, and it's going to be a long, long discussion about all those stuff.
Exactly. So I'd say we could jump straight into it and talk about those 3 days we spent in Dolomites. I guess it was mid-January. We got a great snowfall, a good dump, and we got some filmers together. We had our Mario Capelli, which is always with us. And then we also, I think this summer, we had this idea to film a movie called The Red Face Zone.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, we teamed up with Mario, as you already said, and then Marco Triebelhorn, which we got known to at the Freeride Film Festival. He was the filmer there, and yeah, he's a super nice dude. And so we said, yeah, let's do some movie project in the winter. And yeah, so we teamed up with Marco and Mario, and yeah, we had a quite interesting idea to film some of the narrowest and steepest chutes which the Dolomites can offer. And we already had a zone in mind, which we have already been skiing a few times. I think you found it the first time, right? The Red Face Zone.
Yeah, exactly. It was, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago. I did a longer ski tour with our friend Jonathan, and we went up the ski tour, and on the way there, on the approach, I looked up the left and I was like, what the heck is up there? Like some crazy narrow cracks in the walls. There was also one where I thought it might be some sort of tunnel. Like, but it was barely visible. Like, honestly, you looked up this couloir and there was like a small, white hole in between a rock. And behind you could see a couloir which keeps going up. So,
yeah. It's crazy. I mean, when I go up there now, I always wonder, like, how did you find those chutes? Because when I walk into that valley and I look up to the Red Face Zone site, I would never imagine that you can ride those chutes, because they look so tiny and narrow, and especially the tunnel chute looks like a, I don't know, 20 centimeter hole in the wall. So yeah, I don't know how you got this idea to go up there.
Yeah, like as I said, I guess the thing which triggered me really was the tunnel. Like I really wanted to know what's up there. It's still a few hundred words to get to that entry of the tunnel chute. So yeah, the next day I went straight back with another mate. I mean, snow conditions were amazing that time. And so yeah, we started climbing the tunnel chute, and it turned out that it is actually, like, you know, somehow skiable. And yeah, I'm actually 100% sure that this line nobody ever skied before. Definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks crazy. If you look up there and then if you stand on top of the line, you think like you're gonna go straight down and then you lose your head by passing the tunnel because it's so narrow. But yeah, I have to say, like, after I rode it now a few times, it's definitely rideable. And I think we rode it better and better each time we went there.
And I think that is the thing with those narrow lines chutes, like the tunnel chute, the drop chute, and all those lines which are there. Or at least for me, I need to ride them a couple of times and really get to know them so that I can slowly get to a level where I'm actually say, okay, this is how I want to ride it, and that takes some time.
Yeah, it's also pretty interesting how those lines develop during the year, because I think we rode it early season, we rode it midwinter, and we also tried to ski it like late season. And yeah, if we talk about the tunnel shoot, like in early season, there is this tunnel, you know, and then there is a huge drop in the tunnel, and it's super sketchy. And then if you come like midwinter, the drop is already, yeah, it depends on the snow year, but then it's already, yeah, covered or just a tiny little jump. And in late season, there is only the tunnel and it's barely rideable because the tunnel is so small. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always interesting if you go there because, you know, you never know how you're going to find the line. Is it super spicy? Is it barely possible to go through? And it's really cool.
Yeah, that's crazy because I remember all the times when we were there in December. Also, the first time I was there, it was like a in between sort of thing. Like the drop inside the tunnel was about 1.5 meters, and we climbed it up with the crampons. Like when I was going up there, I was like, "No way, we can ski that." And then the tunnel itself was actually like 1.5 meters high, so justly not high enough that you could pass in a normal skiing position. Then I remember the first time we were going down, I was obviously approaching it super slow and easy. It is steep, I guess, when we measured it last time, it was 56 on top.
Yeah, on top, yeah. Yeah, I think
tunnel it's probably like 52. Yeah. So still like super really, really steep.
Yeah.
And then I was sliding towards the tunnel really, really slow, taking my time, like a lot of hesitating, obviously, and not being sure how it's going to go. And then I actually sent it. I jumped through and then Daniel landed this super narrow sort of like...
outrun. Kind of.
It's still like a shoot, which is
outrun straight line.
Exactly. It's like 2 meters wide. So you can do like some quick sneaky turns to try and get rid of some speed. But in the end, you're not really.
Yeah, the problem is also you get so much speed in the outrun that also after the outrun where it's open up a little bit, it's super hard to slow down. And usually it's a bit sharky there. So you just keep straight lining and you get like super fast. But I remember when I was there the first time, it was the early season a few years ago, and the drop was super high.
Yeah, that was the time. That was the one time where it was insanely high, and you can, like I posted that video a few times on Instagram. It was pretty crazy. Like I think the drop there was 2 meters.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is pretty crazy. Like you go to a tunnel and then you drop down into a narrow.
I mean, if now someone listens and says, "Oh yeah, 2 meter cliff is just super easy," you always have to think about that, like 2 meters in a 52 degrees slope with a landing which is 1.5 meter wide and you cannot crash is super crazy at the end. But just a 2 meter cliff is not crazy.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just nothing, but
it's always depending on the conditions as well, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been there quite a few times when conditions have not been great. It's been a few times that I even downclimbed it because if the landing is firm, I never felt it and I would never feel it to send it and then straight it out on hardback. That would be insanely crazy. And then I remember, like last year, late season, when we have been there, the tunnel was almost not there anymore. It was so small that you had to sit on the tail of your skis and even put your head back that you could get through. But there was obviously no drop anymore.
I remember I had my 360 cameras and I had one on my backpack, the stick. And yeah, you know, the stick is higher than me.
I remember like at the drop-in, we were like, it's going to be bad with the stick. Yeah. So I remember we kept it really short, shorter than the head.
And then I went down and I was going really fast through the tunnel and I just heard that crack, everything broke. I mean, the camera was still usable, but the lens was super scratched and I almost lost the stick and everything. It's just barely passable in late winter, I would say. I think now it's not even passable anymore. It's a really good winter at the moment.
Yeah, so. I think now it's completely closed. I think you could maybe like shovel it out, or maybe you could go over the rock. But yeah, it's probably not skiable right now. Yeah, but yeah, and then at this rat face zone days, I think I was really hoping that we would have good conditions.
Yeah.
And we came there, it was insane. Like that was really something. I have never seen Dolomites, like powder, but really soft and super fair powder, progressive snowpack, and like really top to bottom. There was barely any places which was not powder. It was some sharky places, not many, not in the red face zone, a little bit farther up where we filmed for episode 4. And there for the first time I really felt like that I could possibly ski the lines the way I would like to. Like I would imagine doing and dream to. Like that was the thing when I skied it first. I was like, maybe one day I can actually ski it like super fast.
Yeah, I remember that. I actually didn't feel that good those days. It was still kind of early season and I don't know, somehow, yeah, I lost the sole of my boots at home, so I had to do something, yeah, by myself to create some kind of.
What did you do? I think you took the inner sole of my normal trail running shoes.
I used like 3 inner soles of normal shoes, and I built something like my specific made sole for my snowboard boot. Sorry for that. You still don't have a sole in your mammoth running shoes. But yeah, I didn't feel that good, but I saw you. You were like, it was really impressive to watch it. And to be honest, like for me, if someone drops in first and does a really good run, like you get a lot of pressure like to doing the same. But yeah, it was super cool.
Do you? For me, it's different. Like when I sometimes see you dropping in when you have a really good day, and I see you like, not doing slow turns, but like really, really charging. I'm like, yeah, well, it works. And that usually gives me confidence rather than pressure.
Yeah, I don't know. For sure, there is also some confidence going up, but it's also, all right, like he did it really well. You should not do like a less good run, or you should not fuck it up now. But yeah, obviously, it's always, I mean, if you talk about shoots, I would not say that with skis you have a big advantage. But in some situations you have advantages, like in straight lining, I would say with skis it's easier to keep it together. Doing turns in super narrow shoots with the snowboard, you have a little advantage. And you know, like if we talk about the drop shoot, which you rode insanely, like. That's really crazy. I think the video got 50 million views on TikTok or something like that.
On Instagram.
On Instagram as well.
I think like 80 million on
TikTok. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, but it was incredible. And for example, there with the snowboard, I don't know. I just didn't feel it to straight line everything. And so what usually happens to me very often is that in front of the, like just before I straight line, I do a turn to slow down, to start the straight line like as slow as possible, and then don't get like so much speed at the end. And yeah, it usually happens to me that I wide out myself, so I can't see anymore. And then I need to wait for a moment to let the snow pass. And that's the point where all that slough caught me and just washed me down through the chute. And so I fucked it up.
Yeah, you know, for me, like also saying that, we like last minute, we also got Julian Strauss, a friend of us, which is a really good FPV pilot. And, you know, I could hear like the FPV drone behind my head, like, and everything. And so I dropped in and straight away I released a little slap on the left, like on the super, 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 super steep wall.
Yeah.
And so I knew, like, I either gonna stop now and let all this love and this little slap go in front, but then yeah, that would have fucked up the shot, obviously. Like, the drones were up and everything. Yeah, it would have also, like, broken the line quite a bit. Or I knew now I need to be insanely fast and and really be faster than this left. So I released this thing, bam, then I think I did like a little right turn. I did a little left turn, got some spray in my face, but luckily not too much. And then that, I think that was really the point where I was like, okay, now I need to straight line and straight line from up there. And also this shoot is insanely steep.
Yeah, and then
you have the drop, which on camera looks small, but I guess it was still like a solid
1.5 meters.
Yeah, and there the landing is like a meter wide and over 50 degrees. Yeah. All right, let's send it and bam into this chute. And I had so much speed. Like, you can see on the video, it was, for me, probably I'm not good enough skier, but it was barely controllable.
Yeah,
I just hold it together because I knew what's coming behind me.
Yeah, it's
the white
crazy.
Dragon.
It's crazy. I mean, as spectacular the tunnel chute is, for me, the drop chute is still the most difficult line to ride. I don't know how it's for you.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I only wrote drop chute twice. The one time where you found it and did the first, put your first tracks in there. I think it was that day. Like, you found it and you did the first line of that thing. And
there that was day, Aaron as well.
There was Aaron as well. Yeah.
That was really funny. we need to talk about that as well. Like, we were with Aaron. It was kind of an early season mission. And we were like super stoked to ride all those. They're like pretty short, those lines. They're pretty short. They're very short, but super intense. And super,
they're not that short. Like, they're still like 200 vertical meters. It's not like...
You think 200 vertical meters? Yeah. I don't know.
Tunnel chute for sure.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah, but still kind of short. And Aaron is a big mountain skier. Like, or yeah, he's used to ski, like, also big lines and stuff like that. And we were like super stoked. Ah, we're going to ride those chutes. You cannot even turn your ski because it's too narrow. And he's like, okay. And then we went there and we were like super stoked during the whole end. He was like, I don't know, how do you like this kind of style? And he was like, no. And then we went to the drop chute and he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's like just not skiing anymore.
It's just not skiable. I mean, that day for me, it was also not really skiable. Like, the conditions were way worse than they were at the last shooting days there. Yeah. And I remember, like, the thing is, at drop shoot, once you come to the crux, to the drop, the already like five meters before, it's so narrow that you have absolutely no chance to put your ski sideways or to do a turn. So you need to straight line from at least 5-6 meters from above.
Yeah.
And then the landing is super narrow as well. Absolutely no space for mistakes. And that day I just did the rat face crawl and made my way down.
Ah, really? You did?
Yeah, I think, okay. I'm not sure. But somehow, like, I scrambled my way down and I still sent it. It was still insane, but yeah, obviously completely different than what happened there.
Yeah. I mean, but as you said, you need to write those lines a few times to really get the confidence to write them fast. And I don't know, I also don't want to do it every day because it's still, I never crashed in a line like this, but I'm very often thinking about what would happen if I would crash. Like, I don't know.
I don't know either.
You are super fast. And if you imagine to crash with this speed into a wall, yeah, it must be really shit. I don't know. But also, I have to say, I never, or never is maybe not true, but almost never felt like I would have almost crashed somewhere. Like, I always rode it like that I was in control. Apart from that one time where I waited too long and got washed down with the slough, but that's less dangerous than crashing and tomahawking in the wall.
Yeah, same for me. Like, I need to say, I never really crashed in a couloir, but I also really don't want to imagine what it would be like. Like, with this speed in such a narrow couloir, having the walls flying by like this, it would be really, really bad. And I think, like, the good thing is that we mostly hike up those lines with the powder plates. And so, yeah, we really know what the conditions are like. And then for me, I also had this experience that I get taken by the slough in a narrow chute where you have actually no chance to let it pass. So you need to either race it or not race it and go behind it.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, what really makes a difference is to really know the conditions and to commit. Like, every time I stand up there, I have to take a decision if I'm going to commit, if I'm going to send it or not. There is not really like a way in between. There is like, yeah. Like you put yourself in the white room and you couldn't see, and then
yeah.
You obviously hesitated, which is great, because like sending this drop straight into the narrow outrun chute would have been might have ended up in a big crash.
Yeah, you have to be pretty sure that you're gonna nail it. And I think it's like, before I drop in, I don't know if I'm gonna straight line it or not. Like, I try to commit myself, but I still have this little thing in my head. If you don't feel it at the very last moment, then you just stop, or you just slow down, white out yourself, wait, and yeah, then hopefully not getting taken by the slough. But I think it's very important to have this tiny option to just say, no, I'm not going to do it. Because I think otherwise you would really crash one time in a couloir like that. But talking about the crash, there is one thing which makes me think that it could be maybe also not so bad. Because you don't crash straight into the wall, you know? Like, the wall is on your side, and if you crash, you would like, I don't know, like
bounce
on the wall and bounce again. It's not like you go with 80 kilometers per hour straight into a wall. But for sure, I'm pretty sure that you will gonna hurt yourself. But I'm not sure if you would die, because yeah, that takes.
I don't necessarily think that you would die. I think it's more like downhill biking, where you can get a lot of the times severely hurt, but is very less likely to die than in normal ski touring. Like, what our parents do, like going on an easy ski tour, or what a lot of people do, is probably more risk of dying.
I think the same, because there is not really an avalanche danger in those narrow chutes. And yeah, as you said, it's more like downhill biking. If you crash, you're probably going to hurt yourself. You break your arm, break your leg, or I don't know. But it's hard to die. If you're super unlucky, I think you can.
Yeah,
but it's less likely. And I think that is also a reason why we are doing those lines a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know. I am very scared of avalanches, and like, living here mostly on the southern side of the Alps, we have like every snow coming from the north, we usually have a lot of wind and sometimes sketchy conditions. And yeah, saying that I'm super scared of avalanches, I think it was somehow a natural process to try and stay in those super narrow chutes, where you can on one hand ski with bad visibility, because you always see something with the walls. And on the other hand, you also don't have like an avalanche danger. Like, an avalanche danger with an avalanche which could bury you. Like, it could take you down.
Yeah.
Mostly like slough, or this little slab which I released and stuff like that. But not like an avalanche which buries you.
Yeah. And I think especially if you hike up those lines, or also if you come from top, there are different techniques to check the snow. But it's very easy to check the snow, because you have these 2-3 meters which can slide, and if you make a compression test, it's like super honest, you know. There is not another part of the face which could break, and you could check it with the compression test. You just make that test in the middle of the couloir, and you pretty much see what's going up there. And if you come from the top, it's even nicer. You can go in with a rope. You can check the snow. And yeah, I think that's a really important point for us. We don't want to get hit by avalanches and stuff like that. And I think another reason why we started to ride those couloirs is because in our place here, we do have very often bad winters with not much snow. And if there is snow, then there is a lot of wind and it's super sharky and stuff like that. And usually in the couloirs, all the snow gets blown in. And so there is usually always snow in there. And I think if we look at the last winters we had, it was very often that we just didn't have enough snow to ride open faces. Yeah. It depends obviously on the face. Some covered north face was good, but very often there was just too sharky, too sketchy. Yeah. So we went to the couloirs, and I think now it became something very important for us. And I think we also developed some quite decent skills to ride couloirs.
Yeah. I think it's like everything, like with practice, you get better. And in those couloirs, it is a very different technique than skiing a bigger face. Like Marco Triebelhorn, the guy which filmed the Red Face Zone with us, he actually told us that you get stupid from riding couloirs.
No, it was not Triebelhorn. It was Jakob Wester.
I was Wester, really?
It was Wester, yeah. I remember last winter in Norway, when we teamed up with him, we were talking about those couloirs, and he was like, nah, couloirs is not so nice for me because, you don't have to think. Yeah, you pretty much get stupid when you ride couloirs because you don't have to orientate yourself, and you cannot even decide when you do a turn because you need to look at the structure of the mountain. But yeah, it might be true. It might be true. Sometimes when I ride couloirs for a long time, maybe for 2-3 weeks, only couloirs, and I ride an open face, then it's really hard for me to... Yeah. Or how is it for you?
I think for me, it's just a very different thing. Like, I love the feeling to be in a couloir. I feel also like really protected because I have those walls around me, and it just feels, I don't know, I just feel very, very happy and very... Yeah, where it's just really nice. And also I really love the riding because it gives me an amazing sensation of speed. Like, you know, on a big face, you might hear the wind like blowing on your ears, like shh, which is awesome. But here in a couloir, you have this, plus you also have the walls, which is more visual. And you see like those walls flying past like really fast. So yeah, I don't know, I get even a deeper or a stronger sensation of speed and of flow. And yeah. I just really love it. Like, I hear the wind and I see the walls like flying past. Yeah. I mean, might sound a bit psycho, but I don't know. It's an amazing feeling. And at the same time, I feel very protected and safe in those couloirs. And then, yeah, obviously the riding technique is more adapting to a mountain and less creative. I think you can say it like this, because you, a lot of the times, you cannot decide where you set the turn, but you sort of have to adapt to the couloir or to the chute, especially when we are talking about those narrow ones. And then, yeah, I think it's also a lot of interesting little things which actually make it possible to ride a couloir. Like for me, it was a lot about gear testing. I played around a lot with this. I remember I think it all really started with Highway to Hell. It was one of the earlier lines we skied, which is super narrow and some mandatory straight lines and some mandatory breaking points and all that stuff. And I got 172 long Raster 11, which is still 112 millimeters wide on the foot, which is very wide and very short, because I always saw you with the snowboard, like having this great ability of just put your snowboard sideways and sort of like side slip, get out a lot of speed, but still like be on top of the snow. And I had that idea that it might work with the skis as well, if they're super short or relatively short and very wide. And actually with those skis, I think I progressed a lot.
I remember that. That skis are super short. And as you said, with the snowboard, you for sure have a lot of situations where with skis, it's super hard to slow down. And with the snowboard, you can still like do kind of turns or kind of slowing down stuff where you, with the skis, where you already have the straight line. And that's for sure a good point to take shorter skis. But then I think you need to find the right balance.
Like now I went up with the length a little bit again. I'm like, my favorite couloir ski or shoot ski for this insanely narrow stuff where you cannot really do turns is the 180 Rustler 10 or the 180, the 186 Rustler 10. The great thing is with the 180, it's way easier to get to take speed out, and it's also a way slower ski because it's way shorter. But then once I hit the outrun or some fast bits or even bits where I have the mandatory straight line for a while, I obviously feel way more comfortable on the 86.
Sure.
And I think this is one thing which was really in Aaron's way as well that day we have been in the shoots, because I think it was a low snow year, as we already said, and the couloirs were even shorter, like most of them shorter than our skis are. And then as soon as you would put your, or as soon, like he, I think he had the 86.
And he usually uses quite long skis, or always the longest one.
Yeah, also in the couloirs. And there it was a day where it was pretty hard to get speed out. And so you can barely ski it. You can mostly just straight line it. And that is, if the outrun is not in conditions, it's not an option usually. But nowadays I really like my 180s, or if the conditions are perfect, 186. While on like an open phase, there is nothing nicer than skiing the longer ski, like the 192. It is a huge difference for me to ski a longer ski. It's just way nicer, feels way better, floats way better, it's way more stable, just a way better feeling. But in couloirs, it's totally different.
I had kind of the same experience with the snowboard. Usually when I rode Highway to Hell, which was pretty much the first really narrow steep couloir which we were riding more often, I always used the shoulder board. I think it was a 159, and I put my bindings quite back, so to have a lot of setback to be able to move super quickly with my back foot. And so I could like this could make like this, I always call it the fish movement, you know, because I'm like turning like a fish with the tail, you know, without really making a turn, but still like, it looks like turning, but you actually go pretty much straight. You just slow down and adapt a little bit the direction. And as I got more into couloir riding, I stepped it up. Now I'm on a 161. It's not a huge difference, but still it's a bit of a difference for a snowboard. But same, like on a big face I could also ride a 64, but in couloirs I really like to have it a little bit shorter to be a little bit more agile. And it's just nice to be super reactive. Especially if you wide out yourself, then you can see again, then there is the wall in front of you, you need to adjust something and just make your way through. It's super interesting. I think it's a very specific technique to ride couloirs.
Yeah, this fish turn thing I also tried to adapt to my skiing a little bit. But it is still like, I guess with the ski, you still get so much more speed than with a snowboard once you're pointing it down. So it helps to a certain point, but then once you get too fast, I also feel it gets too, like the trade-off between making a little mistake or losing an edge on those fish turns. And the speed I managed to get out is almost not worth it. So I sometimes just prefer to straight line and really try to hold it together. But I need to say that that's also a reason why I went back to narrower skis in couloirs again. Like, I'm not on the 112 anymore, but on the 102, because I feel I'm just more reactive and faster from edge to edge. Mm. So it just speeds up my skiing or my reactivity. And that is also something which I feel like I really need in a couloir.
What do you think about the radius of skis or snowboards? Because in my opinion, like, if I think about different boards I ride, if I have a long radius, it's quite nice. Because when I ride a couloir, I don't want the board to be like snappy, you know?
Aggressive,
if you put your edge, and I don't want that it's like turning immediately. I want it more to slide sideways and to not go too much to the right or to the left, because they are the walls. And that was a thing which I was trying around a lot. And I came to the point that I use a board with a quite wide radius, which is not aggressive, which is not snappy. And I don't know, but I think you always ride the same ski. You always ride the Raster.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I love that ski and I only ride that ski like 90% of the time. And I do agree on that a lot. Like, I would love to have a ski which has a really wide radius, so the nose and the tail gets way less aggressive and snappy. But then on the other hand, when it gets deeper and or hard or firm, it's amazing to have a shorter radius, so the tail, you have just more edge pressure. Mm. And ski just holds better on the firm snow. And that's the same thing like with taking away my edges. Like, I do that sometimes, you know, I just get rid of the edge in front and in the back quite a lot, especially when the couloir conditions are a bit tricky. But then you have a ski at home which has not great edges in front and in the back.
Yeah.
And then maybe you come to a situation where you go to ski something, a couloir mostly, you know, you take a couloir ski and it's super firm. And it actually becomes a proper skip skiing, because when those couloirs are firm or hard, 56, 55 degrees is super steep. And you I really shit my pants if this thing is hard, like, and I don't have edge.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember in episode 3, in the upper part, it was super icy and I didn't sharpen my edge. They were quite round. And it was really sketchy. I like a lot of parts in episode 3, in that descent, I went down with two ice axes just holding, because I didn't feel the edge to hold. Mm. And then we were in Canale Neri with the TV, and I had like fresh edges from Guflach Ski School, which usually prepare my boards. And it was insane. Like, I felt like on crampons. You know, but as you say, like in a couloir, I also prefer it a little bit round, not too snappy, because the worst thing would be to get a little bit out of control because it's snapping too hard and then crash in the wall. Yeah,
exactly.
Something like that.
But also talking about this experience at Canale Neri with the TV, if I think back, and I thought about it a lot because it was super, super gnarly, the snow. I was pretty much just ice on the top part, super steep, exposed, like absolute no fall zone. And I had a new 186 Rustler with me, but new one. Like, it was the second time I used it. And so obviously the edges were super sharp and new, and I didn't took them off in front and in the back. And I think this, without that, I don't know what would have happened. I hope I would have been smart enough to take on the crampons and down climb a lot of it. Because if I would have been there with bad edges, it would have not ended well. Like skiing that with bad edges would have been a fall, like for sure a fall. I mean, I had my ice axe and everything. Maybe I would have self-arrested myself, but and also after that experience, it was like
what exactly happened up there? Because I was down and I didn't really see you.
Yeah, like there was the entry of the Canale Neri. Now there is no more ice. So the middle part, which was usually quite wide and had a very nice slope and steepness, now got way flatter. And the top part, it was like sort of a pretty smooth slope all the way up.
Yeah.
The top part got super narrow and super steep because there the ice went away, so it's not filled up anymore. And up there where this crux was already going up, I mean, we have been on crampons and we just climbed it with two ice axes and the crampons. And already going up, it felt like, you know, super nice for climbing when you set the ice axe and it's like solid, like boom, you know.
Yeah, this super hard snow, which is not ice, but which holds really well. Yeah, with
it's
the ice
almost axe. Almost close to ice.
Yeah.
Like super icy snow. And then there was quite a lot of rocks spread in this crux, and we sort of had to do like a traverse to the rider's left and then back to the rider's right in the steepest part of the couloir, which I don't know, we haven't measured it that day, but I would guess like 58, really really steep.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I came into this crux and I skied it out to the left. And then I ended up in a pretty shitty position because there was quite a lot of rocks around. So I had to turn around to go back into the main couloir, but there was just not enough space for it. So I was hanging on, or I just had like my ice axe on the left of me and hold on to that one. But I didn't manage to turn, and also like doing a proper jump turn just seemed way too dangerous for me. Like in that moment, I was, and I'm really happy that I didn't try that. And it took me a few minutes to actually get myself out of the situation. I mean, I would have had the chance to go back up or take off the skis, maybe. I think the best would have been just to sidestep a little bit up, get to a better place and get on my crampons and down climb. But obviously, I wanted to ski. I never skied Canale Neri before and so... Yeah, I just stayed on my ice axe and made my way backwards. I did a backwards traverse back into the...
Yeah, you rode back in the couloir switch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, pretty much. I mean, I just pretty much down, not, like, climbed with my ice axe and my skis on. And I think you did the same, right? Like, oh, how did you do it?
I dropped in first and... I knew from the climb that it's going to be super icy there, but I had two ice axes. So I went into the traverse. I went in the switch. So like pretty much climbing with my ice axes. I just went switch into the traverse. And then I down climbed a little bit with my ice axes and like jumping on my edge. And then I rode forward back into the couloir. And for me, obviously, having the snowboard, it was not really sketchy. I mean, you know, these situations where you're super focused, you know, if you fall, you die, but you don't really are in troubles or something. You just think, okay, just be concentrated, just go step by step, don't rush it, and everything is fine. I was kind of in that state of mind. And then I wrote down... And I remember I talked to you to the radio and I told you that it's super icy and super tricky because I already imagined having the skis in this part with the poles and only one ice axe, and you cannot like down climb with two ice axes. I already imagined that it's going to be tricky, but yeah, I didn't really imagine myself exactly how you're going to do it. I thought, yeah, you're going to do it somehow. And then you dropped in and it took pretty long until you came down. And during that time, I was thinking about, yeah, what is he doing up there? And then I thought you actually put on your crampons and you down climbed the part, which would have been probably better in like looking back. I don't know.
Yeah, thinking like this, I mean, a lot of the times it would probably just smart to put your crampons on and down climb. But on the other hand, yeah, it's also a challenge. And yeah, I mean, it was all good. I never put myself into danger. Like I always felt like in the moment, this is okay. You know, I just shouldn't, and I didn't took any steps which could have been really bad. So yeah, I always stayed on my ice axe. I stayed on the same edge. I didn't do a jump turn, and I just made my way out of this situation. Yeah. But there, you know, there it's the point. Like there I had the sharp edges and we didn't expect that Canale Neri is going to be in such icy conditions.
Yeah, I think it was super smart from you that you really took your time, because it's not so easy. Like we were there with the TV, the drone is in the air, everyone is filming, and you drop in. And then you take like 10 minutes to do 5 meters off the crux, you know, off the descent. And there to have the confidence to just say, no, I just take my time until I'm back in the couloir, it's actually super smart. And yeah, it's not so easy. Like I think being less experienced in filming and stuff like that, it could also happen that you just think, I'm just gonna go super fast, it's gonna work, and then you crash.
Yeah. And you don't crash, like you...
you fall down. You fall to down. The bottom.
Yeah, and that is the point. Like, you know, this was, yeah, going back to the red face zone in episode 4, it's a totally different game because it was powder, it was soft, and, you know, I said before, you have the FPV drone behind your head and it's like, and it obviously makes pressure and stress and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But there, the risk is not to fall and die, but the risk is to, you know, maybe crash or do something.
Hurt yourself
or whatever. But it's a lot of the thing. It's also just to find the confidence to send the line in that way. Because, yeah, I sort of trust my skills already when I go up. I'm like, no, I got that, you know. Otherwise, yeah, I wouldn't go up and film that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that is the trade-off with the edges. And I don't know, nowadays I just try to get used to ski those couloirs with the 180 or 186 with sharp edges.
Yeah.
Because you know how many times it happened that we skied the couloir full on.
Then it became hardback.
And then we hit hardback.
Yeah.
It happened a few times.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I would say let's talk about episode 4. yeah, basically we were filming for the red face zone for 2 days. And then it was the third day and we decided to make a YouTube episode. And I remember we were already like pretty tired of those sketchy shoots. And we, like during those 2 days, we always looked at the sunset of the valley and it looked super nice as well. And there were also some ski touring guys going up and doing like nice turns and stuff. And so we were always like, we should go in the sun, like the whole day in the shadow. It was super cold. And yeah, so the actual plan for episode 4 was to ski on the sunset.
Yeah, sort of. I think I think we wanted to ski one of the really bigger mountains in there, and really big lines.
Yeah.
But already in the morning when we woke up, it was some thin clouds and, you know, a lot of wind. We were like, nah, let's take it easy today and make some amazing turns in the fresh powder. I mean, conditions were great. And let's go up to the sun, you know, like have a great day.
Yeah, maybe ski some spines. We saw also some spines on the other side, which were not like crazy big, but maybe like 300 vertical meters, like decent size. And yeah, but I remember like we went in and it was quite cloudy, you know, when the visibility gets a little bit bad and stuff like that. And yeah, so then we decided to go back to the north side of the valley, back in the shadow.
Yeah, I mean, visibility was bad, so couloir would have been the only option. And there was this one couloir, which I saw a lot of times already before, but it just looked way too narrow and way too steep. And just like for me, it always looked unskiable. And I think that was also what I told you. I was like, yeah, it's super amazing. It's super long. It's super steep, but I don't think you can really skied.
I remember 1 year ago we already walked across that crack. We called it the crack, and we were looking at it and we said, no, it's too narrow, like this is not skiable,
this is not the ski line.
But I think after we rode that narrow chutes from the red face zone for 2 days, we were super into couloir riding, and I think like our head somehow told us, yeah, you can do it after those 2 days of sending it, you can definitely ride.
I mean, I've been pumped with confidence after these 2 days. After the first day, I was actually like a bit scared of myself, really, like honestly.
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah, I was a bit scared of myself. Like, what the like, this is crazy. Like the way I skied those few lines was something new for me as well. I was like, this is absolutely crazy, and I was a bit scared of myself. Also thinking about all, like getting all those thoughts about, you know, crashing But then, yeah, second day, I think I took it slightly easier. Or, yeah, I don't know. I just got used to it. And then third day, yeah, we were there, pumped with confidence.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, when we hiked up, I think the middle part is kind of okay. It's super narrow. It's super steep. We measured it. It was like 54 degrees. But when I was hiking up, like for me, it was like, wow, this is going to be sick. I was a bit scared of the line, but I was super stoked. And yeah, coming to the upper part, it got like super narrow.
Yeah. But I mean, already like that crux part, which we both skied really fast on the way up, you know, the snow was not as great as it was in the red face zone.
Yeah, true.
I remember. And I don't know, like going up, I knew that a lot is possible from the last days, but I was also not like 100% sure.
Yeah, and it does like this S turn, like it's not straight. Like
you cannot straight line it. Like exactly. you need to adapt to the. Yeah, you cannot straight line. That's actually like, the point. You need to make turns. Yeah.
You cannot put your skis sideways because it's too narrow. But you still have to do the turn in the perfect timing, like with the perfect timing on that spot.
Yeah, to hold the radius as well. Yeah. You know, like with the speed. And I remember, like, then we came up to where it opens up a little bit. And there was this, like, really amazing patch of soft snow sort of spine. And I told you, yeah, in case you ride it first, please leave a little bit of this little soft patch for me, because it's going to be important to get rid of some speed.
Yeah, true. And coming out of the S-turn crux, let's call it like that, I think we both were thinking about to go really fast in the, it's not the farthest upper part, but it's the part,
the core,
just the core. Yeah. Like just below the super, super narrow part, just below the drop. Yeah. The drop.
I think like when we came up, as I remember, we thought we're just going to stop like where this, like after the wider part on top, we thought we're going to stop. And then I remember we came there and we radioed to Marco and to Mario. Yeah, hey boys, so I guess we're gonna stop here and skid from here. And then
we just kept on going.
And then we're like, fuck it, let's just go up. You know, like what else do we have to do? Worst case, we're going to down climb it. But that part, how narrow was it?
Like it was slightly wider than your skiing pole. So like 160 maybe.
Yeah, on the start, and like, then it got smaller than my skiing.
It was
pole,
so narrower than my snowboard, for sure. we know that. And I think we both were thinking about to go like quite fast on this little bit wider part, just before the crux. But like doing the crux with so much speed wasn't really possible at the end, I would say. Like I think you stopped before the crux, and then you did like crazy straight line to the second part of the couloir. And I, having the snowboard, I didn't stop, but I took it quite easy before the cracks. And then, I also kind of straight lined it. I think I went a little bit slower in the lower part because I was able to do a few more turns in the couloir. But I was happy about that. But yeah, I don't know, like going up to the last, what was it, maybe 50 meters of the couloir, which were insanely narrow. I actually expected it to be quite rideable. But at the end, it just turned out that we were both kind of down climbing.
And yeah, you thought it's going to be rideable.
Yeah, I thought, like, because every few meters, there was a little bit of a snow-covered sidewall or stuff like that where I imagined I could put my board sideways and it could slow down. Like it was super wrong to think like that, because I thought like I could like straight line here and then slow down here and straight line again and stuff like that. And
I remember you were quite nervous when we came on top
because
like, so it's the time of the day, let's do rock paper scissors, and you were like, I'm not even sure if I want to ride this first.
Yeah.
I think there you were actually honest at first.
I was honest. Yeah. But you know why? Because I was playing with the thought that I could ride the farthest upper part really fast. Somehow straight line, slow down, straight line again. That was the reason why I was super nervous and why I was not sure if I want to ride it first. But for sure, like the down climb then was also quite, it was just shit.
I find it funny. Like,
yeah, because you could do this, rat face crawl
as Mario Triebelhorn calls it. But yeah, in the end, that thing to explain to everyone, this is like, it's not something we invented, but it's been out there.
Yeah.
It's when you like put yourself on your back. So you pretty much, touch the snow with your backpack. I think it needs to be sort of really steep. Otherwise it's not really nice. And then instead of having your skis like parallel, to the face or to the couloir, you just take them up and stick the tail of your skis straight in a 90 degree angle into the face, into the snow.
Yeah, it's kind same, of a backwards climbing.
Yeah, pretty much if you would just crawl down a steep couloir on your heels. But obviously behind your heels you still have like some stuff, like some ski left, which is really nice. It's like it's almost like a snow anchor sort of thing, like you put your ski in back and you just walk down. Yeah. And that works. I did that before quite a few times and it helped me out of situations.
Yeah.
But I think you never saw me doing that.
No, I never saw that. And you were like, okay, 3, 2, 1, drop in. I was like, okay, yeah, let's see what happens. And then you just crawled down the couloir. I was like, what the fuck is he doing?
How did you thought I would ski that couloir?
I don't know. I don't know. I was just, okay, let's just see how he's going to do. I was expecting different scenarios. I was expecting that you would maybe straight line it, which is completely crazy. But look, like watching you the days before, I was thinking about everything. Like I thought, yeah, he could do everything. Maybe he somehow slows down after the straight line. And I don't know. I was hoping you're not going to do it. Then I was expecting you maybe to down climb it, just to go until that chute and then just say, no, I'm going to down climb. But I didn't expect this crawl technique, which worked amazing, I would say.
Yeah, it works great.
It worked way better than for me with the snowboard. I couldn't do that.
You somehow like hold, like you almost like properly climbed it down, right? Like holding on to the sidewalls and like...
Yeah, I hold on to the sidewalls and just moved my board through the rocks and just got down. It was a bit shit for me. I think you can also hear it in the episode. It was not super scary or something, but it was just a bit uncomfortable and I just would have preferred to ride this shoot. But yeah, I mean, it was at the end, the whole experience of riding the crack was super nice with all the details it had inside, the scrambling on top, the middle bar, the cracks, the outrun, which was kind of sketchy as well.
Yeah, because it was sharky. Eh?
Yeah, it was sharky. I remember I hit the shark in the cracks. That was super sketchy, but I was so fast that I didn't really realize it. I realized it later. I think I also told you in the episode that I hit the shark. I just hear it and I felt like a hit from the bottom of the board, but it was not really like bringing me out of my line. Or
yeah, I analyzed my line as well, like the POV from that thing. And in the first part of the S, I obviously had to do the left turn to hit the first part of the S. And I can see on the POV that my tail touches the sidewall, because I was thinking that maybe I was a bit backseat, so my tail would get stuck in the snow. But I had a look again, and it was like my bottom ski hit the wall in the back, and like that couldn't turn. So I was like, why did I had such a dirty technique there, and why it didn't work? But yeah, the rest of the run, yeah, then I had so much speed, and I usually feel really good when I have a lot of speed. Things just got very, very smooth. And
stable,
then, but I also lost it in the outro, and I was like, I think I said something like, this is fucked up. Or I was like, what the fuck is going on again?
True. Yeah, for me, same. I mean, I hit the shark at the very last part of the outrun, and then I just thought, oh man, like, you should really take it easy, because I don't know, like, hitting those sharks in an outrun where you even have more speed than in the couloir, and everything around you could be sharky as well. You could crash and hit another shark with your body, and it was on the limit. It was for sure on the limit, but it was also so much fun. And I think it was quite controlled with a little bit of sketchiness inside.
Again, you would most likely not die, which on a totally normal 35 degree easy ass ski tour, there is always a chance that something goes and you die. You know,
if there is an avalanche danger, you're probably not going to be hurt, but you could just die because...
If there is snow, there is avalanche danger. Yeah. not really. But yeah, in a way, you know. And that is the trade-off. Like, I don't know. I think it just feels way more intense than big face riding. And I just love couloirs.
Yeah. But then...
Even though if Jakob Wester says I'm going to be stupid.
Yeah, maybe you already are.
That's probably because I already like it that much.
Yeah. And then, we went to the south side, which looked amazing, and which also was amazing. Like, the snow was incredible. Conditions were sick. The only thing of that second mission in the episode was that we only had like one turn in the sun. We were a bit too late.
I don't know, like, for me it was already a win as soon as we got the sun into our face for the first time. It was really cold days, and then like getting up there and finally seeing the sun, and it was powder and sun, like, whoa, this is amazing.
What I want to talk about, because we watched episode 4, and in the last uphill part, we're a little bit scared of avalanches. I remember there was one part where you say, yeah, if you slip, you die. And then there is another part where I'm like kind of nervous that something slips. And if I watch the episode, it looks like, to me, especially the part, yeah, if you slip, you die, I think, like, where should you slip and where should you die? But it was actually like that. It's just not really visible on the footage we had. But there was like this tiny uphill crux, which was super round, and there was a pocket on the right side, and especially on the right side, there is like a 500 meter vertical wall. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that because sometimes I watch episodes and I think, oh, people must think like that we make a show or something like that. But it was really honest.
Yeah, I remember like that was an honest thing I told to you, like, watch out, don't go too far out to the right, because if something slips or if you slip, it was sort of icy there. Yeah. You might slip down on the wrong side of the mountain, and you know the side which we rode was super amazing and easy, but the other side is just burnt. And so
and then this bucket later on, we didn't really had a lot of information about the snowpack on the south side, and that was the first really steep and maybe also loaded bucket with quite some exposure below. So that was actually the reason why I was a bit concerned about crossing here. And I think you waited behind me and we went one by one and took it quite serious. But I think it's always better to take those situations very serious and always calculate with the worst case scenario. Even then, if it turned out that the slope was pretty stable, I would say.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, it doesn't cost much to go one by one and stay in a safe spot and don't try to put too much pressure on these spots, especially when it's exposed. And
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, then it got a bit of a rush. And I hate rush. Rush on the mountain is really bad.
It's super dangerous as well.
A lot of situations which went wrong. Luckily, no, I don't have any situation in mind which did, but it's usually small things happen because of rush.
Yeah, for sure. I remember we were standing on top and we were both super stressed. I mean, because we did the whole sunside mission to have turns in the sun, and then we saw the sun going up and up and the shadow coming towards us.
I think obviously. I've never been that fast on a summit with the...
Yeah, with putting off your skins and getting ready for dropping.
Closing boot.
True. But yeah, I mean, we had to one turn in the sun, which was amazing. And then the flat light was crazy. Like, I remember I went straight into the shadow and immediately I lost all the, you know, like there was no clouds, but still if you're in the shadow and there is a lot of sun still behind you and everything, you kind of lose visibility. And I hit a little bit of a lip and I was already, I mean, I didn't crash, but it was like, wow, what the fuck is going on? And maybe we also need to talk about the last part of that descent, which is not in the episode. We were like quite stressed on top and we didn't have the time to scout the face properly. And it was a huge rollover, and it was kind of hard to, because basically it's a big face and then there is a lot of shoots and steep faces and also vertical walls going down to the bottom, and you need pretty much to get the right shoot to go out of that,
the right turn off to the left, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I dropped in first, and from far away the face looked quite big, so I was imagining like doing, I don't know, 6-7 big video turns and then turn to the left. But actually the face was not that huge, so I did my 7 turns and then I went to the left and I dropped into a couloir, but it actually turned out to be the wrong couloir, so it was way farther down. And so I ended up standing on a vertical wall, which was super exposed, and I didn't know how to get out of that situation because I didn't know where I am, pretty much. Then I told you and then you came down to me.
Yeah, I mean, I was on top and it was really the last sun was about to go, and I really wanted to get that amazing turn in the sun.
Yeah.
And I also knew if it's way better that both of us are in the same place and we try to solve the situation together. And I mean, that's also a thing which I always keep in mind, you can always hike back up, especially if you have the powder blades. Yeah, and I did it a few times. So I thought like, yeah, let's just go down there. Let's do the last few turns. And then I don't care anymore. We will make our way out or up again, or somehow we will manage it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, the reason why it's not in the episode, it would be a perfect drama story to then lose track and everything. But it was just not covered nicely with the cameras. I think Mario was super concerned that we're gonna fall down the wall or something. So he was not filming.
No, he was filming. I think the thing was, we obviously radioed our filmers, Mario and Marco.
Yeah.
And also asked for direction, if there is a way out, if we need to go back up. And so I guess Mario with the drone was mostly looking to find to complete the puzzle that we can get out of there. And then also the light was super flat, the sun was down, it was pretty dark. Also on the tele of Marco, it just didn't look that good. Or you just didn't really understood where we are.
Yeah. It was just really hard to tell that story as it was, with that camera coverage and everything with the light. It just looked quite stupid, because we tried to put it into the episode and it just didn't turn out as it was. So we just said, let's just keep it away.
It looked like we would try to make it more dramatic than it was. I mean, it was not super dramatic, but on the camera you just didn't saw the exposure. So it's like, two guys standing on top of a rock, because you couldn't see the bottom. And they're talking about how we're gonna get out there. And so we were like, also we were pretty stoked with the episode, how it was, the narrow crack and everything, and so but I guess that is also the reason why we do the podcast, right?
Yeah, exactly. That we can talk about the stories which are not in the YouTube episodes.
Yeah.
That's
and I mean, it's fair. I think it's fair. It's great also to give people an idea of what's behind. And you know, we try to show a lot or as much as from the real stuff which happened as we can.
Yeah.
But then still, you have situations which are just not covered well enough, and then it's just boring and not nice to watch. But you can
tell. Yeah, exactly. I mean, as you said, like with the episodes, we already covered pretty much everything, but there is still stuff which, as you said, are not filmed and are not, you cannot tell them nicely, so that it gets boring and stuff like that. And I think therefore the podcast is a quite nice tool to really be very transparent of what are we doing and which kind of experiences we have in the mountains.
And yeah, and to complete this little story, like I came down to you and then we, with Mario's help, we found a way out to the right, like we traversed out to the right, and then it actually turned out to be quite okay.
Yeah.
And we just made our way down. It took some time and it got pretty much dark. But yeah, it was all good.
It was all good and we had a great day, and I think the episode turned out to be super cool. It's actually, it's actually my favorite episode so far. It's really fun.
Yeah, I like it as well. I mean, I really like the mission of episode 3, but this one is just really well made also in post-production. I just really like Marco's style.
Marco did an amazing job on editing this episode, and we never had troubles with him. He was super fast. He was super nice to work with. And hopefully we can do some more episodes with him. Would be great.
Yeah, and I think that is a great point to wrap this podcast up. I hope everybody had a great time and can take away something from our crazy couloir experiences. And make sure to go out there, be safe and enjoy.
Yeah. Also from my side, it was nice to talk about those topics, and see you in the next episode. Cheers.